Why am I an advocate? Why do I advocate so passionately about it? Is I see career development as a form of infrastructure. I think it helps people make sense of their lives in terms of learning opportunities, work, and what is their purpose and values across their life and life roles. And when we, as career development practitioners, help establish that strong infrastructure, people are better able to navigate change because they've got that foundation. They know their strengths, they know what their skills are, and they know what skills are missing that they need to develop. And so, at an individual level, they become more self-aware.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to APCDA Season 6, Episode 1 on the mic with thought leaders. I'm Samantha, I'm your co-host, and with me is Dr. Michael. Say hi.
Hello. Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Mike Stevelton. I'm at the University of Minnesota, Twin Cities, and it's a pleasure to be with you.
So, in our episode today, we have the honor to invite Dr. Candy Ho. All right, I would like to invite her to the virtual stage to share with us who she is as a person. Dr. Candy Ho, please.
Hi, everybody. Thank you, Samantha. Thank you, Dr. Mike, for inviting me for part of this episode. There's a lot of who I am as a person, and I imagine people that are listening, career development professionals, that we're multifaceted too. So, on a professional capacity, I'm currently the Chancellor's Chair at Kwantlen Polytechnic University. What that means is I am a faculty member who teach career development courses. And I'm very lucky to have received an award related to my research on connecting learning, career development, and the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. And I look forward to telling you a little bit more about the project later on. I am also an author of a career development textbook and two other books that I'll tell you more about later on when we talk about future projects that I'm already really excited about. And I'm currently the past chair of CERIC, and CERIC is one of Canada's not-for-profit organization on career development. So we put on an annual conference called the Kinexus. It's one of the world's largest career development conference that is both in person and hybrid. And off the non-career development stuff, I am a mother, I'm a spouse, I am a caregiver, and most recently, one of my new hobbies is I keep mason bees.
Wow, that is
That's a
power
hobbies. Yeah.
pack. My goodness. Thank you so much for your introduction. I mean, from your narrative, I can see how you actually view even your own life as a constellation of many life roles, head and head. So that is really good.
I'm really pleased to learn about the life role theory very early on in my career towards career development. And now I pinch myself as I feel I get to go around the world and work with career development professionals and organizations to talk about not only theories, but what are some of the best practices that are grounded in context? What do people need in the contemporary world we have these days? So, yeah, I wouldn't change a thing for the world.
I appreciated your introduction, Candy. And of course, we've met before in the past, different venues. And when I hear your many roles, both paid and unpaid, I think about our colleague, Tristram Hooley, who defines career as how we spend our time. And clearly, between bees and authoring books and presentations and your service work, you're spending your time very wisely and your schedule is full. I know that as well. So thank you. Thank you for your introduction. I was thinking back to the first time we met, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think it was the summer of 2018 at a National Career Development Association conference in Phoenix, Arizona. Does that sound right to you,
Was it
approximately?
2018? I thought it was 2016 because I was smirking when you're like, yeah, we know each other. I'm like, I think we know each other
Yeah.
almost a decade, Mike.
Okay,
Yeah,
it was
definitely
somewhere, it
the
was
Phoenix Conference.
pre-pandemic, but I think it might have been 18 because you were finishing up your dissertation at the time. And I remember going to one of your sessions, and it was about you're talking about this idea of being a career influencer. And that was the first time that exact term had been introduced to me. And I remember having some engaging conversations that we've now continued 7 plus years or 9 plus years. And I'm wondering if you could tell our listeners a little bit about, first of all, maybe what the career influencer concept includes, but maybe even more importantly, is how were you attracted to this concept and why did you decide to center your dissertation work on this concept specifically?
I think you get to say you knew me when I was a graduate student contemplating this idea and
Yes.
figuring out what to do with it next. So it all started. I was a junior faculty. I was just starting my journey as a faculty member at Kwantlen Polytechnic University, where I'm still at now. And I was situated within work integrated learning. So I help students with their co-op, volunteer, and any other possibilities that's related to career development, however, primarily co-op, although we have a lot of great career conversations. And it keeps coming up when I have these conversations with students that so-and-so professor that was teaching an accounting course or a criminology course were particularly helpful. And so I made a point to go to these professors and say, did you know that your students rave about you and how you help them with your career journey and development? And to my surprise, these people, even though they're doing the work, they didn't understand or they didn't realize that they have an influence on students' career development. So they, and then they tell me humbly, you know, I feel like I'm just doing my job. That's part of my job is to facilitate connections with students. And the more I look into it, the more I see them as a very special breed of human beings because it was, I don't believe everybody does that. And so it led me to pursue my doctoral research on understanding what are the motivations of these individuals and wouldn't it be cool if we can cultivate a university or a post-secondary higher education environment where everybody in the institution that works for the institutions believe that helping students with their career development is part of what they do in their day-to-day work.
And as I recall, a career influencer can be almost anyone, right, on a campus or even a non-academic setting that interacts with students or clients. And I know oftentimes you say that if we define career broadly, any conversation has the potential to be a career conversation. I love that quote. I say that often, Candy, and I always give you credit just to be sure. But I love that because I think it illustrates the impact that like faculty members, advisors, career counselors can have on students. And as you said, they might not even know that they're already doing this important work. Can you tease that out a little bit more?
I love that you brought us back to every conversation can be a career conversation because going back to what Tristram said, if career is defined as how we spend our time, then we've just expanded the idea that career can is anything that we do that's related. So it's not just about work. It's not just about paid job. It can be both paid and unpaid. And going back to your point, yes, I started with better understanding faculty members. And then I've got students who pointed me to people who run volunteer or peer support programs that also play a role as part of the students' career development, and also deans who write recommendation letters or who congratulate students who perform really well in their academic standing. And so it took me on quite a journey to interview these individuals on why and how have they found themselves in the role, their conceptions and beliefs on career development, because what you believe can also tell us about what are some of the things that you value and which also drives action as we learn. And I think the way that I approach my work now is when I go into consulting gig or even on a day-to-day basis, work with my colleagues in at my institution is to help them see, did you know that you're part of students' career development? And if not, let me help you understand the ways. Or they come back and tell me, I didn't know that I was doing this, but now you've helped me become more aware of it. So it turns from accidental to intentional.
Yeah, I like that. And I think we've talked about this together and written. I've had the pleasure to co-author with you on a couple of pieces where we've talked about some of the responsibilities of a career influencer. And there's some competencies. I think there are seven of them. We won't go through all of them, but it's advising, it's guiding, it's advocating. And these are interactions and traits that we do as career development practitioners on a regular basis, but as you said, we might not articulate it in that same way. I like this idea. Some of our campuses, I know here in the United States, probably in Canada and elsewhere, are adopting what are called, sometimes they're called career influencer programs, but sometimes they're also called career champions. Is that similar idea? Is that you're championing or advocating by engaging with students?
You and I did a presentation at NCDA a couple years ago, a pre-conference PDI, Professional Development Institute. And so in our environmental scan, there were career influencers, career champions, career advocates, even. There is a lot of different terminology. And when you look at those programs a little bit deeper, they get at a very similar notion. And so it doesn't matter what we call it, as long as the students are benefiting from quality, well-grounded career advice from these individuals.
Yeah, exactly. And to bring it back to your bio, and then I want to get Samantha in here too, see if you have some reactions to what we're hearing here from Candy. But do you feel like you've embedded or intentionally integrated some of these ideas into your own philosophy of helping as a career practitioner? Do you see some overlap there, or do you see this as maybe just adjacent to your work? How have you maybe integrated it?
I think the reason why I was driven to this work is because it has been an inherent belief through and through. And I forgot to mention, before I started working in the career development space, I have spent years working in higher education student affairs. In fact, that's how I came across some of your writings, Mike, from things like student life. I worked in academic advising, I worked in residence, I worked in new student orientation program, and even a university advancement. And we just talked about career as the life role, as a constellation of your life roles, if you will. And so it is hard for me to not make those connections when I've moved from role to role, and there are commonalities. And everything that I had been doing up to that point, I certainly didn't know it then, but in hindsight, I know it now that it's always been towards student success. And I always find myself gravitating questions, even when I worked in advising, that, what are your plans to do with a degree like this? Because it's going to help me better generate advice for the students. And even when I was working as a volunteer manager, I'm always advocating towards their career
I
development.
love that. Sometimes it's easier to connect the dots looking backward, right, than looking forward. Samantha, other insights?
Two things that I'm thinking about. Number one is, you have said so much so passionately about career development and advocating for it. I'm just wondering, why is it so important to you? Even like at this point in time, because it sounds like it has been a while that you are doing this work, but so why is it so important? That's the very first question. And number two was, how do we make sure collectively that we raise the standard of career development practices? Because anyone can be an advocate for it. And there are so many terminologies out there right now. And when we are looking at social media, people can just brand themselves any. How do we juggle?
Yeah, I guess going back to that first question, why am I an advocate? Why do I advocate so passionately about it? Is I see career development as a form of infrastructure. I think it helps people make sense of their lives in terms of learning opportunities, work, and what is their purpose and values across their life and life roles. And when we as career development practitioners help establish that strong infrastructure, people are better able to navigate change because they've got that foundation. They know their strengths, they know what their skills are, and they know what skills are missing that they need to develop. And so at an individual level, they become more self-aware. And I think there's also another level where we need to work with organizations to develop more talent more effectively, whether it is new talents that they're recruiting or current talents that they need to move up and above the organization. And then overall, the third level, then communities, as a result, when you've got people that are self-aware, that know how to best leverage their talents and skills, you've got highly productive organizations with happy employees, then communities are much more resilient. And when I also seen on the other end, when I've done some consulting, I get brought in, when things like this, the infrastructure is missing and people are left to figure out what are the gaps, what do they need to do to manage transition out from their own. So for that reason, advocating for career development and career development services is critical. And I think that's what the work that many of us do, many listeners in this podcast, not just individual, but organizational.
Yeah, you brought up a term that I relate really well, which is awareness. For you to build your career, for someone to be advocating for career, the level of clarity and the level of awareness must be there. And it all sum up that if someone is able to take charge of their own career, have that awareness to bring it forward, the world seems to be a better place to live in.
It goes back to branding, right? If you know what you're offering and you know in your gut that you're good at it, the world sees it. And without needing to be explicit about pushing your branding. So it's instead of saying, this is what I can do, you're already showing the world what you can do. That in itself, it's much stronger evidence than you just saying it.
Definitely.
I like that, Candy, a lot, and I think that was a insightful question, Samantha, about this idea of how do we advocate for other clients? How do we advocate for our students, those of us in higher ed settings? And I think this idea of branding can be applied to the individual, but as Candy mentioned, there's an organizational perspective as well. And I think those that are involved in organizations are oftentimes more engaged, right? They have better attendance records, less absentee. They're more likely to go the extra mile if they're fully engaged in their work. And that, of course, benefits the individual, but in this case, more importantly, maybe it also benefits the organization. So I think that's important to mention. I want to pivot just slightly. I know some of our listeners might work with students and young people in particular, younger clients, maybe either in for-profit settings or nonprofit or governmental contexts. And I think there's a lot of pressure right now, and maybe I'll just speak from my own lens of working with young first-year university students. There's a lot of pressure coming into university to have it all figured out right at the beginning and to maybe do less exploration than young people were encouraged to do in the past. And I'm not sure if that's a good thing or more of a negative phenomenon that we're experiencing. So first, Candy, maybe you can comment on your own observations around this working with young people. And then secondly, I know we've talked and written about this idea about career wandering, and I'm wondering if you could say a little bit about how that concept might relate to the concept.
I think the expectation for young people to know what is it that they're supposed to be doing is problematic. And I've said it in many of the media channels that I get to be a part of, maybe some keynotes as well when I'm speaking with parents. It never stops. So maybe let me give you an example here. I had the opportunity to speak with my university's parent and family orientation a couple of times. And every time when I get to talk about careers in a gym full of a couple hundred parents and families that are eagerly looking for good career advice and tips and strategies to help with their student success, they are in the right place for the right reason. And I also asked them this question. I asked them, go back to when you were age 16, think about what was it that you wanted to do? What was your aspiration when you were 16 as a teenager? And then I also asked them, what is it that they're doing now? Then I get them to raise their hands. So, how many of you are doing the thing that you thought you were doing when you were 16? Probably a handful, 2 to 3 people raised their hands. So we've just effectively proved the point that people don't, can't, shouldn't have themselves, has everything figured out. Because between 16 and turning into whatever age that they're in, that they're taking care of a university student, a lot of things can happen. And that's where some of our career development theories, such as happenstance and chaos theories, really shine. Because if only one or two people are sticking to quote unquote the plan, for those that are listening, I'm using air quotes here, then we are doing ourselves a disservice by expecting and telling people you need to have your life figure out. In fact, It's been my experience that people were always going to be exploring and wandering, whether we know it or not. Because if you engage in everyday life experience, you're going to learn something about yourself that's different, that's new, possibly every day. And if you choose to be attuned to that, then maybe it's a pivot. Maybe it's saying yes to a project. Maybe it is saying no to an opportunity that you know it's not a good match, but then opening up some other possibilities. So I'd like to think of this, and I like to use the choose your own adventure analogy, because have a choice means that it's really important for you to think about how this might impact what you do. And I ask team people that I work with, what are you hoping to learn from this experience and this possibility about yourself, about your possibilities, about how you want to contribute to the world? And it goes back to the idea of career wandering. It came from a Lord of the Rings quote. So not all those who wander are lost. It was inspired by when I was doing a keynote in New Zealand. I took a tour of the Lord of the Rings set and saw the quote, and I was just like, Mike, we got to write an article about this because we don't talk
I
about it enough.
remember.
And I'm still getting people that are really interested and ask me for a copy of the article. And I hope it speaks to the spirit that we're always wandering is not a bad thing, that we automatically do it without knowing it. And it just doesn't get the reputation, doesn't get the credit it deserves to help us navigate our lives.
Yeah. Thank you. And maybe we'll have an opportunity to put that in the show notes. That was a piece that you led and we co-authored together, and it was in the Journal of College and Character. I think that was about a year or so ago. And I also get requests around that. So I think we maybe struck a nerve there. And I like this idea of possibly shifting kind of the lens, if you will, around indecision, right? So a lot of, I think, young people, maybe even some parents, feel like indecision should be avoided. And I've oftentimes talked to my students, it sounds like maybe you and maybe even Samantha has done this, is seeing the merits of indecision. So praising indecisiveness as long as you're moving and exploring different options. And you mentioned the theory of planned happenstance by the late John Crumbolz, who was a professor at Stanford University. He would oftentimes talk about the wisdom of indecision. And he would say, don't talk about being undecided. Instead, see yourself as open-minded. And he would go on to say that's the only acceptable place to be. So he would extol the virtues of indecision. And it's not being frozen in place or not being active. In fact, it's quite the opposite. But you're taking in information, you're exploring different pathways, and then eventually you come to a decision. So I love that idea and how you tied it to this idea of career wandering. Samantha,
Absolutely.
any other thoughts on that idea or other insights that you want to share?
I was just sitting in and listening to both of you, and I'm just reflecting on what is happening in Singapore context as well. It's like these students, when they enter university, I think like the year ones, when they come to me, they're so anxious. They are like, what should I do for my 4 years? When should I do internship? How many internships should I be doing? So they are really trying to get a better job prospects. It can be really competitive. Yeah. So when the term career wandering, or even like integrating joy into your experience here, is something that I advocate to my students as well. So my advice to them would be like, can you just have fun for your first semester? Get to know the people around you, get to know the school. But I can also understand the anxiety that comes with it. So I'm also just thinking out loud, which maybe both of y'all can help me, is how can career practitioners help the student, or help the clients to sit with their anxiety sometimes, or the uncertain, the discomfort. Yeah, that I have to make sure that my ends meet for professionals or for students. I need to plan my career, I need to plan my curriculum, versus how can I sit with the discomfort of being unknown, still exploring, and find joy in the process. Yeah. What do both of y'all think?
I think
Go
we
ahead,
need to
Candy. Yeah.
normalize the idea of sitting with discomfort. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. And I think it's part of being what a university or college student is all about. And I too have been that student myself where I feel like, oh, I got my first course calendar up, so I need to plan for this semester and the next 3 semesters. And then slowly, as I moved to second and third year, I realized I was over planning because things change all the time. And so the part, if I think question that discomfort is also really important. So what gives you unease about not knowing for the future, and what are some of the things that you need to know or you can know right now? I was teaching last Monday and I shared a joke with my class because we were talking about interviews and how to do well in interviews. And I showed them a meme that said, in 2015, if anybody was asked the question at an interview, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Nobody would have gotten the right answer because, as we know, 2015, 5 years later, we're looking at 2020 during the pandemic. And so the pandemic is a really excellent example of how things can change really quickly. And despite having good laid plans, things can change, and you're going to have to. The word that's overused is pivot and move forward and be flexible. And yes, it brings you discomfort. And if it's any consolation, I think a much more healthy idea is think about the next right step forward, take it, then go to the next one, then keep going. And learn to be comfortable with small step that really adds up over time.
I like that really very much. I think number one, the asking good question, what makes you so uncomfortable about not knowing the unknown and taking the next small step, that compounding effect. I really like that concept there to support individuals through that discomfort, uncomfortable feeling sometimes.
And maybe I'll just add one more thing before we get Dr. Mike to speak. It's just look back to your past, look at your successes, look at how far you've come. And it's the idea of when you look backwards, you can also look forward to the future. So we never start from scratch. And so if you're sitting with some discomfort, think about your past successes. Think about the strategies that you've used to find yourself there. And what are you going to do? Can you use the similar strategies and move forward?
I hear that acknowledgement of your previous wins as well is so important in our society right now. Thank you, Dr. Candy. How about Dr. Mike? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm listening to Candy and I always learn so much from you, and I'm always connecting it to other sort of ideas or links. And so some of us will build on the comments that you already made. I think the pandemic served as a career shock. That's a term that's used now in some career development literature by Josh Ackermans and his colleagues. But it's this idea of it could be unintentional or it could be something that's planned, unplanned or planned. And certainly no one was planning on the pandemic. And for a lot of people, the pandemic had negative consequences, right? They lost their jobs, they lost loved ones. And so their pathways shifted in terms of work and the role that work played in their lives. For others, it was positive. You've heard of this term, the great resignation that sort of resulted from the pandemic. And for many people, they had the courage then to try new opportunities. Maybe they decided to go. A lot of people went back to school. Applications at master's programs and other professional programs increased significantly during those years after the pandemic. And so for many people, that shock was something that actually ended up being quite positive. On a side note, the organizational psychologist Anthony Coltz, who came up with that term, great resignation, has a new book out coming, I think, later this month in March, and it's called JOLT. And I forget the full title, but it takes this idea of a career shock and looks at it from this perspective, both positive and negative. I'm not Anthony's agent, so I'm not getting any royalties or anything here, but I just thought I would share that. I was listening to another podcast earlier, and he was a guest. But it takes that idea of how we can't always plan our careers, and that's why being somewhat undecided can be viewed as positive. I'm also thinking another quote from John Crumbles, who I mentioned earlier, is when students would come to him and be anxious about career decisions or what pathway might they follow after graduation, he would ask them a simple question. And the question was this, and I love this. He would say, "What fun do you want to have next?" And I have that quote on a piece of paper right in my office because I think it applies to us as well, right? We can get anxious about what career move, what opportunity should we take? Should I stay or should I go? And I like John's idea of what fun do you want to try next? And I think we can apply that same philosophy, maybe even give that same question to our students, and hopefully that'll alleviate some of the anxiety. So that's what I would have to offer there, Samantha.
Thank you. Thank you. I like that. What
Yeah.
fun would you like to have next? I think it's something
Yeah.
that I will share with my students and my clients in upcoming session to get them to think of something that will excite them as well. So I think that the ability to be excited about something is really important, which brings me to my next question, Dr. Candy. You have done so much work. Maybe can you share with us one or two projects you are working on right now?
Yeah, as the Chancellor's Chair, I have received a 3-year award at my university where I get to go back to K-12 educators and work with them to implement incorporate the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals in their curriculum and then research and learn about their experience. So we're in year two of the experience and it's been phenomenal. The fun that I'm having right now is working with some very driven and inspiring K-12 educators, from a kindergarten teacher who wanted to teach her students about kindness, to a career development educator, career head of their career department, teaching high school kids about decent work. Not only that, bringing those kids back to elementary school where they can teach primary or elementary school students about decent work. So that's one really exciting thing that I get to work on. The other thing that I'm just about to wrap up a book with Dr. Karen Chris from the UK, where we were co-editors and we invited authors from all over the world to tell us about transformative and transferable green skills using the UNICEF framework and how do they see it fall into the project drawdown and the various themes from carbon emission, advocacy in policy to long-term thinking. And then one more book that I'm currently writing with some really brilliant people, Lisa Taylor and Taryn Blanchard from the Challenge Factory. We're looking at how higher education leaders need career development to be exceptional leaders to thrive in complicated times that we're in.
Okay, that's so fun. That is the fun that you're embarking on right now. Can you elaborate a little bit more on the sustainability goals that the work that you are doing right now? Because you gave a very brief summary. I'm very intrigued by it that you are teaching the teachers and the teachers are going to use that to teach the younger generation.
Yeah, and so the United Nations in 2015 has identified 17 interconnected sustainable development goals, ranging from things like zero hunger, no poverty, quality education, of course, decent work and economic growth, and peace, justice, and strong institutions. I can't name all 17, but I can name most of them here. And as you can imagine, these goals are very broad. What does clean water and sanitation mean to me in Canada might mean very differently to Mike in the US and to you, Samantha, in Singapore. So what we've done is we've given the framework, we've taught the framework to educators. In fact, many of them know about the framework already before we started to work with them. And we gave them an opportunity to identify the goals that they think their class should be working on. And then, because they are the expertise of their curriculum, so they design lesson or unit plans that allude to the SDGs and they implement it. And when they come back and tell us all about it, we research and learn more about their experience and any advice that they have and implications it has on our school system and what teachers like them can do when it comes to advancing the sustainable development goals.
Yeah, thank you. And I know that you've done some intentional integration of the sustainability goals into your curriculum with the class that you teach. And I know that you recently authored a paper in the journal, this is a mouthful, but I'll try and get it right here, the Journal of the National Institute for Career Education and Counseling. Sounds very academic, Candy, like a good journal should. But you talked a little bit about asking students to embed some of these opportunities and goals in the classroom. And I think you were really trying to look at experiential education. So I'm wondering if you could talk about one or two of these assignments and then what you think students came away from that project. What did they learn?
Yeah, the National Institute for Career Education and Counseling is a phenomenal organization, and I had the privilege to be one of their conference keynote speakers a couple years ago. And a big thank you to Tristram Hooley, who was shepherding my article and certainly the journal and giving me some really valuable writing guidance and tips as well. And I, in the keynote and the article, which came later, I get to talk about the course that I'm teaching. So at KPU, Kwantlen Polytechnic University, I'm teaching a career capstone course where students in their final years, they come from all walks of life, all kinds of disciplines, from arts, business, science, design, you name it, and they come in their final years to talk about what is it that their plans are after graduation. So it's like I said before, choose your own adventure where you can tell me, as students can tell me, I want to go into graduate school. I want to apply for this job after graduation, or I want to start my own business. So whatever their goals are, it's an incubator where they get to work on applications, business plans, conduct information interviews related to what they want to do. And so tons and tons of experiential activities, as you said, Mike. And what I've done in recent years is I've infused the SDGs into this work. So, for instance, when I get them to talk about them, practice doing interviews or elevator pitches if they're starting their own business, I get them to think about how does it relate to a sustainable goal that they've identified for themselves that would be really useful. Essentially, I'm getting them to think about what problems in the world do they think that they're solving by offering their skills and talent as a solution. And so we start off within their very first class, getting them to learn about the SDGs, and then it stays with them because every class somehow we always come back to how do you want to serve the world, even towards the final assignment where they conduct three information interviews and reflect about it. One of the key questions is, what did you learn as a result of that? That's connecting to the SDGs. So it's not just about what they want to do after graduation, it is how do they want to serve the world. So for me, that second question is a lot broader. And employers are paying more attention about not just who the candidate is on the table or at the interview table, but what are they going to do to help advance maybe the organizational mission and values and things like that.
Yeah, thank you. And I think that article, you did a really thoughtful job of integrating the theory with the practice and the application. And you provide such, I think, engaging examples of how students learn through these different activities. And I appreciate that question of how do you want to serve the world? And it reminds me of some of our colleagues' work. JP Michel talks about the challenge mindset, right? And so it's this idea of, I think, at least in the past and current as well, there's a big focus on the job title. What will I be doing? And JP asks us to pivot a little bit and gets at this idea of service. What might be the larger problem or challenge that you want to contribute to? And it's not like you're going to come up with a cure for cancer necessarily. I think sometimes students can get overwhelmed when you say, what world's challenges do you want to tackle? But you might have some small piece of that, right? Your effort or your efforts might go to solving that challenge or at least trying to manage it. Thank you.
It goes back to the idea of adding up, right? The small actions
Adding
really
up.
play and it adds up.
That is very thoughtful, because I'm just thinking that I have never really thought of bringing that idea to students, because it can sound like a big idea, like what Dr. Mike mentioned. But then again, giving them that overview, that brief, overarching dimension, it can probably help them to think bigger and then reverse engineer backwards. So I thought that was a very thoughtful question. Thank you, Dr. Candy. And I also have a question for you is, it looks like we are living in a world increasingly shaped by artificial intelligence. There's a lot of disruption. How do you see career service provider evolving?
In the sense that they have to evolve. Yes, I think career services providers, I think there's more important role than ever for them. I think artificial intelligence is changing how people access information. However, I also think that information alone has never been the hardest part of navigating a career, and people can look up that information. But the differentiation that career services provider can make is interpreting, skillfully and thoughtfully interpreting that information that people get, ensuring that, oh, this information is credible because it's grounded in this research versus, oh, this is something I found on Instagram, for instance. And I think people are trying to just understand what are the changes in technology, skills, what does it mean for me if I work in a certain industry, how would it impact my livelihood? And I think the work that career services providers and professionals do, we help people make sense of that complexity because people are overwhelmed with so much information. And I think, yes, there is a place for AI. I don't think it's going away. It's going to handle some of the more transactional parts of career services. So maybe we are, if the client, if our students are comfortable, maybe they are leveraging artificial intelligence to see, okay, can I get some first level feedback on my application? And I have cautioned students against using AI to write their entire application. I actually did something like this in one of the classes that I teach, where one is people generated, people wrote the application, the other one is AI, and students can also tell which one it feels more superficial and which one feels more human. What is that like? And so I think with artificial intelligence, it's able to help us do some of the very entry level work, and it elevates the work that we do. And I don't think I can conclude what I'm saying without saying that there is also an environmental impact with AI as well, in which it's using tons of water to cool down the supercomputers that are running AI. So I think we need to be cognizant of that, in addition to the information that you're feeding, in that it becomes part of AI, its learning model. So security is also of a concern, and overall ethics.
Yeah, I think that's really important and insightful to consider the environmental impact of AI. And I do think also, I was thinking, Candy, about what you said about how even some of the traditional processes that are involved in job seeking and job application might be going away in the future. I was looking at a LinkedIn post earlier today, and the title was something like The Death of the Resume. Right. So this idea of resume and cover letters can be generated by AI. And if you read like you said, if you read a cover letter assisted by chat or another large language model, it's pretty evident, right? There's just no spirit. It's like it's void of any humanity. And you're right. I think employers, if they're reading the cover letters at all these days, they know right away that it's not a real student or job seeker writing that letter. So it'd be interesting to see how that will continue to shift, right, in the role of technology on a job application and just the employment process. So there's been a lot written recently about concerns around the future of work. And as Samantha mentioned, AI is just one of those trends. But I know I saw some recent reports, job reports that said that the number of jobs has decreased here in the States, probably elsewhere. Unemployment, especially amongst new recent graduates, college graduates, is up, so there's a lot of concern around our graduating seniors about the type of work that they might do. To put all that negativity aside for a minute, Samantha and I were wondering, what is bringing you hope and joy? And it could be related to your paid work roles, it could be related to non-paid roles. What are you optimistic about given where we're at in this world today?
I think young people, students that are in my class, that shows a lot of curiosity and promise at the same time. They are engaged, they find the fact that they are finding hope, that they're motivated and inspired. When we have 3 hours of class together and time flies by, it's hard to describe, but it's the good chemistry and the good relations that we have as a class that brings me joy and hope for the future, because I think about, wow, these are the young people that's going to run the world one day. And providing that we help them discover who they are and find the skills and opportunities that they need, I think the world is in a really good position. So that is what brings me joy in the age of doom scrolling and the darkness that sometimes we feel these days. And I mentioned earlier that I am a mason beekeeper. So I'm not a honey beekeeper. And the difference is, honey beekeepers are extremely dedicated. They spend a lot of hours raising their bees and collecting honey. As a mason beekeeper, I live in a small apartment and I can raise these bees in my balcony because they're solitary bees. They're in their own individual apartments. And I last year, when I started this hobby that's turning into something bigger, I bought 10 bee larvae to just a starter group. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, nothing is happening. I see one or two bees in my balcony, but that really was it. So 6 months later, when it was time to break apart the apartment because they've laid their eggs, their larvae for the year, we broke it open from 10 turned 50. So that was a really big lesson for me to A, be patient, B, be hopeful, and C, I think I've realized that sometimes the efforts that we make, we don't get immediate benefits and results, and that's okay. But over time, should your heart and intention be in the right place? I think the universe has a way to show you that you're doing the right thing. So in a couple of weeks from now, we're gonna take out the 50 larvae and put them in their apartments again and grow the bee community.
That is a
Love
very
that.
interesting hobby that you
Yeah.
have. I can't
Yeah.
imagine raising bees and cultivating my own honey. That's very
I did
cool.
not think that was me last year. There you go. Happenstance.
Yeah. I have to ask, and I'm sure Samantha's thinking this too. Have you been stung by one of your bees, your roommates there at your own apartment?
No, they are actually very friendly. They do,
Okay.
they buzz when I'm in the balcony, and sometimes they do get close, but as long as they know, they get a sense that you're not here to attack, you don't mean no threats, they're okay.
Okay. All right. That's good.
That's a lot of lesson learned from cultivating your own honey with your own bees. I'm really still wrapping my head around it. And I really appreciate the part when you mentioned be patient, be hopeful, and be okay with delayed gratification. Because in a world whereby we are moving so fast, sometimes going a little bit slower and having the faith that things will happen, good things can happen, is very encouraging.
Yeah. Hey, can I share with you one more thing that brings me joy that's related to career development?
Sure.
Certainly.
I was showing Dr. Mike and Samantha earlier, audience, and you can't quite see this, but because of the screen, but you're looking at a hashtag CDB pin, and somehow the bee has become a symbol of the work that we do in career development, because I hope that through podcasts like this, we've all come to realize that we do more than just helping people find work or find jobs. We help people find fulfilling lives so that they get better. We uplift people from poverty. We help people go back to school so to enhance their education and prospects. And so just like that, bees also cross-pollinate between flowers. And so I started a campaign called the hashtag CDB campaign. And I made these pins because I'm nerdy like that. And I've been giving them away at conferences. And so if you wouldn't mind putting in show notes, because what's happening is there's a Padlet now that is of the world map. And people who have received these pins, whether or not they receive these pins actually, are encouraged to drop a pin in the world map and tell us how they're changing the world through their work as career development professionals. So I'll send that to you both, but it's something that brings me a lot of joy whenever somebody share that they're coming from Australia, for instance, that they're making a difference very far away from where I am. So I'll
Definitely,
bring some
please
to
share it with us.
yeah
Yeah,
I'll bring some to the conference when I come visit you in Singapore.
yes, I would definitely
Excellent.
love to join the movement as well. Thank you.
Excellent. And I love that idea of like B as a career metaphor. Candy, I know we've talked a little bit about that before, how sometimes authors use different metaphors to get a better understanding of career or career development. There was a piece that came out from Donald a couple of years ago about the weather and how the weather can be seen as different, like tornadoes or sunrise, different types of weather episodes or conditions you might think about. I think you've got something here with the bee and the beekeeping as a career metaphor. Well, we'll come back to that.
We'll have to
That'll be
think
the
about it,
next.
Mike.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. You got the beginnings of another writing project. So I know we're coming close to the end of our time. Samantha, I think you have at least one more question for Dr. Ho.
Yes, so it is more like a fun question. We are in the midst because we are in the midst of having a lineup of speakers, thought leaders like yourself. You do not know who is the thought leader or next speaker yet, but if there's a question that you would like to ask our next speaker or any ideas that you want our next speaker to share, what would that be?
I think carrying on the bee metaphor, I'd love to learn from the next speaker how they are cross-pollinating and playing outside of the career development world to make a difference.
Excellent.
Great question. This question will be asked to our next speaker so that we have a legacy going on, so that we get to learn from one another all the time. I love that question. Thank you, Dr. Candy, for being on our show today, for sharing your insights and so many wisdom and so many ideas that we can implement in our practice today. It was really a pleasure for me to not just be the co-host of this podcast, but to be a listener directly hearing it from the horse's mouth. So I thank you for your time. It's wonderful.
I always feel like I learned something new, Candy. Of course, there's reoccurring themes, right, in the work that we do, but I always appreciate your new insights and learn of new projects and contributions. I know you're very busy, and I just want to appreciate your time and your insights. And Samantha and I are very grateful. So thank you.
Thanks, team. Thanks, APCDA.
Thank you, and see you in the
Thank
next
you.
episode. It was such a joy hearing Dr. Candy from her sharing. I learned so much and I have so many ideas right now in my head that I'm going to implement some of them with the works of my students and my clients. So,
Yeah.
Dr. Michael, how about you? What was your takeaway from this episode?
Yeah, I think what a gift, right? I mean, Candy is just such a leader in the career development profession, and she's doing so many innovative projects. So it's hard to know where to start, but a couple ideas stood out for me. One was I really appreciated her understanding and explanation of the career influencer concept, right? And this idea that you don't have to be a trained, graduate level career development counselor or professional to engage in career related discussions, right? It can come from everyday interactions with our students and our clients. And I appreciate the point that she said about we might be doing this already and not even know the impact that we're having. And I know as a faculty member, sometimes my colleagues don't realize the impact they can have on students when it comes to these types of conversations. And I also appreciated how she talked about career being a constellation of life roles, both paid and unpaid, right? I think so often when we think about career, we think about the paid work, right? We think about our salary, of course. And yes, that's important. And young people in particular are thinking about that. But I think when you think about career longevity, the new career is going to be this constellation of moving in and out of and balancing the paid roles and the non-paid roles. So those were two ideas that stood out for me. How about you? What did you get out of it?
I feel like she is living it. She's living everything that she's advocating for.
Yeah.
One of the
Yep.
most interesting things that she shared in the episode was how she is now she's cultivating her own honey. She has bees in a in the at the backyard. And how
Yeah.
are those learnings that she used to work with her students in career development work. So that was very inspiring for someone who thinks who works with young people. I think stories like this, real life experiences like this will be very intriguing to the clients that we work with. And I think the other one that stood up to me was the great questions that she asked when we were on the topic of career wandering, sitting with discomfort. How do we manage that anxiety of, I really want it quick, but yet at the same time, I need to give myself the time and space to explore what is good for me, what is suitable for me. So that was something that hits me really hard, and I feel for it.
And I think we all three of us shared kind of the experiences of working with young people. And you had alluded to the anxiety that they feel about choosing the right career or the perfect career. And we know that there's no such thing as a vocational soulmate, right? There's probably multiple soulmates out there that'll bring some degree of happiness. So I appreciated that concept as well. I also think that Candy makes some valuable contributions around the sustainability goals. And some of her efforts and contributions around climate and global climate issues. And so, this project that she worked on, where she had students embed some of these sustainability goals, there are 17 of them. And I think students could pick and choose what they wanted to do. They didn't have to do all of them, Samantha. I don't think, I think Candy has high expectations, but maybe not quite that high. But I think what I appreciated was how she use this idea of experiential learning and really nudge students to integrate some of these objectives into applied experiences. So I think that was a good example of integrating kind of the theory or conceptual models with applied applicable outcomes for students. And I think as educators and career development professionals, we need to do more of that, where students can kind of see the end product of their effort.
Definitely. I like how that concept of sustainability, the SDG goals, can be used as a tool for career development professional to work with students in terms of planning out their career, even their personal branding and elevator pitch as well. It's thinking bigger of themselves, right? Bigger than themselves, and then doing more good to the community. So I'm really excited for the listener to delve deeper into the episode to learn what are some of these tips and strategy and all those exciting stuff that we both have learned.